Slowly, the permanence of the military's takeover of civilian life in Chile began to sink in. René Castro.
When the coup d'etat happens and people realize that it was a real coup d'etat, because everybody thought, oh, it will be an intervention by the military and then they will give the government back to the civilians. That's what most of the people thought at the time. We said, no, this is not a regular coup d'etat. You don't make this concentration camp just for a coup d'etat will change the system. They will change the whole conception and they will change the constitution. And eventually that will happen. Today, Chile is still under the Pinochet constitution. And most of the problem that we have politically today is because we have a constitution who was designed for Pinochet.
Life went on slowly. We went back to work. Slowly things start to look normal.
Isabel Allende stayed in Chile until 1974.
There was absolute censorship in the press and all the media. So we only heard about what was happening by rumors and by what we could see ourselves in the streets. I had many leftist friends, and I'm from Allende's family. I was not involved in politics or in the government at the time, but I was a journalist and I knew more or less what was going on because I had many connections. At the beginning, people didn't quite believe the rumors of torture and killing and the extent of it because it had never happened in Chile. So it was so unusual, something so difficult to handle. Then we sort of started getting used to the idea. And I found myself talking about torture at breakfast in front of my children. Repression became something normal that one had to live with. And then I told my husband we were going crazy, that we couldn't live like this. We couldn't live in a place where torture and killing and torturing children in front of their parents, assassinating people, making people disappear, was normal. Where not having freedom was normal. We just couldn't live like that. And I tried to keep myself sane by repeating to myself all the time that we couldn't get used to it, that we had to fight back, that we had to tell the world what was going on. And I was not alone, of course. Many, many people were thinking and feeling as I was.
The resistance in Chile had begun soon after the coup and grew, though not without great pains. Isabel Allende.
Unmarked cars. And they would arrest someone, and the person would start shouting his or her name so that people will know that that person in particular was missing. I knew of people who had been tortured. I interviewed several. I saw the scars. I saw the trauma, the psychological trauma, the terror. I had to hide people also in my house and then try to place them in embassies. It was almost impossible to go through the gate, of course, because all the embassies were guarded. Most people had to jump a wall. And sometimes a mother would have to jump a wall and a newborn baby was left behind. And my job or somebody else's job would be to get the baby into the embassy. It wasn't easy. It was a hard time. But it was also a time of solidarity, a time in which I realized that for every torturer, there were 1,000 Chileans willing to help. For every person that was going to pick up the phone and tell somebody else and have that person arrested, there would be 5 willing to hide that person. It was a time when the worst and the best came to the surface. People who were very outspoken leaders went into hiding. And people who were quiet priests, because, of course, those were the people that you cannot put in a cage, the people whose minds you can't control. And they are the ones who sort of express the voice of the people.
Of course, they tried to wipe this movement out by killing the artists, by censorship.
Joan Jara.
But during the military government, in spite of everything, in the clandestinity, desire for this type of artistic expression.
El humano, el humano está formado.
El
humano está formado. Y un espíritu y un cuerpo. Y un espíritu y un espíritu y un cuerpo. Y un corazón que palpita.
I couldn't live in a state of terror, that I didn't want my children to grow up there. And I was beginning to think that it would last much longer than I had expected. Then by the end of 1974, I had been involved in many things that were considered illegal by the dictatorship. And I was feeling more and more scared. I felt that the circle of repression was closing around me. Then, from two different people, I heard that I was going to be arrested. I went into hiding into somebody else's house, but then I started fearing that if they caught me, something might happen to my children, whatever, and then I decided to leave in a matter of a week.
The years that followed were among the darkest in Chile, as the junta consolidated its hold on Chilean society and extended its reach even beyond Chile's borders.
Operación Cóndor was created by the Chileans.
Isabel Letelier.
A colonel called Colonel Contreras. He had the big idea of getting together the secret polices of the countries around Chile that had military governments. It was Argentina and Brazil and Bolivia and Uruguay and Paraguay. And they all together share information through computers. They would arrest people in one country and torture him in another country, or just send out information that such and such person should be eliminated in a different country. It was done with the knowledge of the FBI and the CIA. They had information about the operations and they sponsored the operations. They collaborated in the work of Condor. I guess the Condor operation was terminated when DINA, the Chilean secret police, killed Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. under the orders of General Pinochet. Some other military and Cubans and an American citizen killed him with a bomb. The CIA and the FBI and the American government felt that they had gone too far, that it was all right if they had these operations of killing away in the Southern Cone, but coming to Washington, D.C. was a travesty. So Operación Cóndor was terminated.
The plot to assassinate Orlando Letelier revealed the lengths to which the junta would go to rid itself of dissent and the precision with which its assassins would take aim. Before his death, Orlando Letelier had called for a return to democracy in Chile and had, like Salvador Allende, espoused Chile's right to benefit from its own natural resources. Many opponents of the military regime believe the purpose of the coup and the support the United States gave the Chilean generals was to open the way to foreign capital once again.
There was a lesson that was being taught to us.
Ariel Dorfman.
And if you look at what happened in the next 25 years, what the after effects of that coup and everything surrounding it, the repression, the shock therapy, and the torture, the exile, the mass murders that happened, the genocide that happened in the rest of Latin America, if you look at what happened, you will see that it was fundamentally a way of integrating Chile and Latin America into the global marketplace. It was a way of making these countries absolutely ready for foreign capital that could be invested, and that's what we saw. But of course, what we saw also is that the foreign capital was invested, but most of the benefits were not given to our people, but ended up in banks in the United States and elsewhere.